Jambo, fellow adventurers, this is Mike Dooley, and you are listening to David Wood on the Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Well, good evening. Why do I say good evening when this is Tuesday? Because, honestly, it's Monday. I'm sitting outside on the most gorgeous night. I'm sitting out on my deck, and there is a turquoise light blue. I mean, there's no sun. What time is it? It's 8:45 at night. I happen to be flying on a very early flight in the morning. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to take a precaution and I'll record the show tonight instead of tomorrow morning. I like to do it the day of. But the lake is shimmering. There's this beautiful light all around the mountains. So the mountains are pitch black. And you can see the edges where the trees are, where it's kind of like a little fuzzy edge. But the light behind it is just unbelievable, especially as I'm looking to the east here. It is really, really stunning. And the twinkling of little white lights as I look off into the distance. And really, really beautiful. But anyway, so I thought I'd, again, record tonight. And it's interesting. My guests are fabulous. They are the wonderful Sahar and Tzfia. And Sahar is actually a Palestinian lady, really an amazing, amazing leader, follows in her mother's footsteps, as you're going to find out, and really, really does an amazing job bringing communities together. And Tzfia has worked, she's really an award-winning film producer for commercials and also for movies, and the assistant director with Steven Spielberg. You're going to hear me talk about that in the show. As you can tell, I've already pre-recorded this show. And I want you to know what I do. You know, it's important that you get that. But, you know, she's just very passionate, really, about the Jewish and Arab community and sharing the message of acceptance. And I think that really this whole show is about that. And, you know, as you look at really what does that mean to sort of give the gift of acceptance, and that means really letting go of judgment. And I think it's one of the hardest things for many people to do. And I always feel that something, I feel like I've really managed to get to a place in my life. I don't like to blah all about me here, but I do feel that I don't judge people. And I think that comes from having made a lot of mistakes. But as I think about this show, and really it's about these two women, one from Palestine, one from Israel. And for those of you that don't understand, if you understand sort of the history of Israel, and again, this is from the top of my head, so if I get some things wrong, I apologize to our Israeli and our Arab listeners if I make a mistake here. But this is what I understand to be true. David Ben-Gurion was the first prime minister of Israel. Prior to being Israel, it was, called Palestine. But the formation of the State of Israel, I actually imagine this time in history where you've got Golda Meir, you've got David Ben-Gurion, Moshe Dayan, these real sort of guerrilla leaders at that time, sitting together and deciding to form the State of Israel. And of course, you've got these Arab leagues that around them that obviously don't want this to happen. And again, this isn't a political thing. I don't have a political bone in my body here. But just imagine the history, sort of what happens in history, and the fact that the conflict is still going on today. And everyone has got a different opinion of why that is. And it doesn't matter why it is. I mean, what matters is how you are about it personally, what your thoughts are. And I think so often our understanding of a situation is sculpted by the media or sculpted by very, very little information. And I remember when I lived in Israel, I lived there from 1984 to 1985. And it was really where I stopped being afraid. I mean, I remember arriving in Israel, this terrified little boy, really. and a year of my life there, and the gift to Israel and Palestine, if I was to talk in both both countries. And you have to understand that. And so for those of you that don't understand the conflict, the Palestinian people, the original people of the land, believe it's their territory. And the Israelis, of course, have formed a state of Israel. So there's a conflict, and there's certain areas, the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, that have been given or are the sort of the territorial land of the Palestinians. But, of course, the Israelis are the governing force in that region. And again, there is a lot of complexity to any conflict. It doesn't matter whether it's in Africa. It doesn't matter whether it's in the Middle East. It doesn't matter where the in Ireland. I often talk about the conflict in Ireland because that's the one I grew up with. In the sense that, you know, growing up in England, where there was a lot of bombings and, you know, from the between the Protestants and the Catholics and the Sinn Féin and all the things that went on when I was growing up. But again, my job here is not, or I feel that my role here is just to sort of give you a glimpse behind the curtain of these amazing women. And when they stand in the middle of something that has gone on for so long, and really hatred is an incredible word. I don't know what the world would be like if it didn't exist. I have a bit of a potty mouth, and I don't always say the right things, but I don't like using the word hatred. It's something that actually grates me to the point where I'm sure for some women, some of the foulest swear words would do that to you, but the word hatred does that to me. And sadly, there's a lot of hatred in the world between people. And I think on the show, I think what Tzvia and Zahar do beautifully is really allow us to understand where hate comes from, and sort of the seven steps of forgiveness that they understand and they practice. And they really give us hope that all peoples who really have grown up indoctrinated with a thought or a belief system about a race of people, about a group of people, that there is hope. And not saying that there aren't bad people within every group of people. I mean, there are. There are people in Canadians who are not very nice, and there's Americans that aren't very nice, and there's Israelis that aren't very nice, and there's Arabs that aren't very nice. But truly, that I think the heart of every human being can really listen to this show with a glimmer of hope. And the next time you start a judgment in your head about any race of people or any sect of people or whatever, and you really don't know them, I urge you to delve in and find out more. Find out the history. Find out what really happened. And reserve your judgment for more understanding, because it's easy to take a side, especially in ignorance. But it's very, very hard as a kick-ass like practitioner to really stay open to the possibility of deeper understanding in lieu of taking sides and pointing a finger and throwing stones in glass houses. So with that, I want you to sit back and enjoy the wonderful conversation with Zahar and Tzvia. Well, here I am. You know, I'm sitting out at the lake. You can hear by my voice that I've had a little bit of a problem with my larynx. I was telling a joke and I blew a larynx. And so, but I am so excited. I have two guests on the show today. Each one of them are contributing at such a wonderful level in such a needed place in the world. And I'm overcome with excitement because this topic is one that is very, very near and dear to my heart. So Zahar and Tzvia, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
You know,
thank you for the opportunity to be with you today, David.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Let me start with you, Zahar, because, you know, your story is compelling. And, you know, as a Palestinian woman, to be doing what you're doing in the world is unbelievable. But why don't you take us back to a moment in time when you realize the work that you do, and that's going to become evident on the show, what you do. But I just want to go back
as a woman growing up, as you did, and seeing what was going on in the world that you lived in. Why don't you take us back and just explain why you stepped into this movement, why you've created this groundswell of women coming together to do this work.
That's a wonderful question, David. First, I'd like to say that I believe that our present time requires the wiser use of our capacity as women. We need to come together, David, and help one another thrive in our personal as well as our business lives. And because we are called to join together, not just to grow our own immediate community, but to be part of this great shift of human history. How it started is I want to say that I am blessed to say that I grew up with a mother who was an activist, a Palestinian activist, but she was also a peace activist. I grew up witnessing this amazing woman who was able to go and make an impact, not just for the Palestinian people in general, but for women as well. 2010, I lost my mother. She passed, and ever since then, I knew intuitively that I need to carry on the torch. But when she came through and came in my dreams one time and said to me, Sahar, it is time for you to carry on this mission that I have started, except it's not going to be territorial. It's going to be universal. And that's when I committed, David, to inviting Sphia to be part of the movement that I started that's called the Gift of Acceptance. And Sphia said yes, and we have been at it ever since. Where I grew up, it was not a nice place. It was a place we were told that we're supposed to hate, a place we were told that we are enemies, a place we were told that, you know, you have no rights to live here, and you have no rights at all to be as human. And so it is very painful for the Palestinian people what they're enduring. But at the same time, the Israelis have that same pain as well. And I had to come to recognize that coming and living here in the United States and seeing my mother also being open to meeting with Israelis and meeting with Jewish community and dialogue and starting conversations. In fact, she was one of the first people to be invited by, at the time it was our mayor, Dianne Feinstein, to have an underground conversation and dialogue between the Palestinian and the Jewish community in San Francisco. So I grew up witnessing that and knowing that it is okay for us to reach out and it is okay for us to dialogue. And that's where it all started.
You know, and for people who don't understand the conflict, we'll delve into that in a moment. If you're not aware of the conflict that's been a part of the landscape of Israel and Palestine, formerly Palestine and partly Palestine. We'll go into that. You can draw the map for us as you both see it now through these peace eyes. What I love, though, is that this started with a group of women in your living room, and now there's thousands of women around the world, and it's crossed many cultures and where there's conflict. In fact, it's crossed all cultures and all geographical locations. Wherever there's hatred or hatred being indoctrinated into children, your work is sort of sifting into the hearts of women and allowing them to see with new eyes. How do you feel about that start, you know, with a few women in your living room and now sort of being able to have a global voice?
Yes. I went through an adversity in 2007, and I knew in my heart that where I need to start, it was a humble beginning for me. And I knew that I needed to empower, inspire women, specifically to have them unveil their brilliance and share their voices. And so I started my family room with six women. I was going through a divorce, a foreclosure, a bankruptcy, IRS auditing. I tell you, everything you could ever imagine, David. And I called it the dark side of life. And then I thought, you know, perhaps I could think the opposite and start the bright side of life women's community. And I began to invite women from different backgrounds, diverse, you know, backgrounds, different ethnicity, to share the message of to empower and inspire them to be able to step up and do whatever they need to do to really voice their message and learn how to first, of course, love themselves and reach out to others to empower and inspire others as well. And the journey, 5 years later, we have over 5,500 members. We have events that, you know, we invite over a couple of hundred women on a monthly basis. We invite big speakers to come and speak. And so I've developed to be a beautiful community. And so, you know, I thought, in addition to have the Bright Side of Life community, there has to be something that I need to do for the world. And that's where the Voices of Leadership movement had begun. Gift of Acceptance movement has begun with Sphia. It's an addition to the Bright Side of Life community as I continue to grow.
And Sphia, let me talk to you for a sec. I mean, one of my favorite movies that moved me deeply, I don't know if, but I think you both know this, that I lived in Israel for a year. I used to play on a Palestinian soccer team. So I kind of feel like I've had a unique peek behind this curtain, having both Israeli and Palestinian friends. But, you know, you were the assistant director with Steven Spielberg of Schindler's List. And I don't know if there's ever been a movie but before or since that captured the level of both hatred and love in a single movie that was real. I mean, it was a real I can't say the word, a real look at it, what was really going on. And your job was to collect the survivors of one man's love, one man who saw through the hate as you two are. And I can't remember how many there were now, but there was really hundreds of people from the handful he was able to save, and their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. How was that for you to work on a movie like that, to look into deeply into the conflict of hatred, let's say?
You know, I had the privilege, A, working with Spielberg, and B, to meeting. We brought in 360 survivors from around the world. And it really, I think that from all the movies that I worked on, it really shifted my thought about people and about how people can help other people. I was just after the army when I worked on this movie. And it really gave me a recognition about how deep people can go down in the worst way, in the worst, I guess, path of life to the best path in life of helping other people. And I think I took from that a really relating to people in a different way. Yeah. It's this opening your heart. I mean, Schindler did all kinds of things. He was very controversial. People didn't always like him. But one thing he did, he saved thousands and generations of people. Yeah. And I think that's where he should be recognized for.
It was interesting. I watched Schindler's List, I think, 5 times. And I watched it in different countries, Canada and the U.S. And again, this isn't any slant on the United States, but I remember being horrified. I was watching it in Florida. And there, you know, you remember the scene in the movie where the little boy hides in the latrine? He jumps into the toilet and hides away to try and save his life. And I think the people didn't understand the depth of what was happening on the screen, to the point where people started to laugh at certain parts of the movie because they just didn't know how to deal with it. There was no, in the world that they were living in, I don't think there was any real correlation. And I'm sitting there, I got tears flooding down my face, having been to the Holocaust Museum in Tel Aviv and sort of, you know, really seen, I think, a glimpse of hatred that is just beyond compare, beyond words. But then I think this movie and this idea of love and the idea that love can conquer and bring together and open doors. What has been this journey for you of both seeing and observing in a very unique way, having worked with those 360 survivors and hearing the stories firsthand, but also the love and the capacity of the human spirit and how one can conquer the other? How's that been for you to really open that door of love in your own heart and then sort of really being able to let people experience that themselves?
You know, I run now the Jewish Film Festival. That's my job. I'm the executive director. And I think part of my mission from that movie, working on that movie, and how I bring that now to the world, is I really try, and Sahar's been to many of our movies, I really try to bring the movies that I see will make a difference to other people in their love to other people. So if we show a movie called David, that it's you should see it, David, for David. It's an amazing movie about Muslims and Jews, how they could be enemies, but actually in that movie there's a huge shift towards two kids who relate to each other's religion and fall in love with each other. So I try to bring the movies that I think will make an impact towards people to get closer. Yeah. So not only showing this terrible stuff in Holocaust that happened, but we bring movies that people can relate to, how people helped each other in the Holocaust, after the Holocaust, stories about love, stories about just relationships. So that's kind of, I think, I can't say it started from Schindler's, because, you know, before that I could say it was all about the hate when the Arabs are bad, because I just got out of the army, but I could say that movie specifically probably led to where I am bringing our festival to now.
And I think, as you say about the army, I think a lot of people don't know that in Israel, everyone's in the army. I mean, there's a handful of people that don't, but I mean, as you're growing up in Israel, the women, you join the army for 2 years, right?
Correct.
And the men would join for 3 years.
Is that minimum.
Right? Minimum. Yeah. But then you're on call. I mean, if there's ever any problems, I mean, you're kind of in the army for life though. I mean, you can be called up at any time after that. Is that right?
So the boys until 50, the girls are usually off the hook at 20.
Okay. So I want to go back and just sort of let people see this global issue. I mean, if we talk about the Protestants and Catholics in Ireland, or if we talk about the Zulus and Khoisas in South Africa, or we go through any of the African countries or around the world, there this hatred between differences exists. And it's crazy in this sort of time, this age of, apparently of enlightenment, that men and women can hate each other. Sahara, can you talk about hatred? Where do you, in everything you've done, where is this hatred coming from?
It's our upbringing. It's what we were told, David, when we are growing up. You know, we see our families, our parents. They've been told that they have to hate this individual, that country, or that nation, or that culture, or that ethnic, or that religion. So obviously, it's generation after generation. It grows the same way. I want to share with you a story. 2007, my brother got married in Jerusalem, and it was the first time for me to go back, because I grew up primarily in the Middle East in general, in Jordan, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, because my father used to manage airports all over the Arab world. So I really did not visit the West Bank quite a bit, but my mother was very active over there. So anyhow, I went there, and it's been a while. And when I entered, we have a beautiful home over there in the West Bank in the town called Bir Zeit. Bir Zeit is a town in the West Bank, and it is like the Berkeley of San Francisco. It is where the university is, very educated town. So I walked in, and I noticed there was a bucket of rocks right to the right of the entrance of the house. And of course, you know, I suspected what was going on, but I just asked my mother, I said, Mom, what is this bucket of rock doing here in front of your house? She said, well, I'm not going to tell you anything now, but I want you to experience. And don't worry, you might hear some noises in the middle of the night. And don't fear, everything will be okay afterwards. So 3:30 in the morning, I woke up with looking outside of my window, and I saw a big Israeli tanker driving through the town. And before I knew it, little kids, 5 years old, 6 year old, 7 year old kids were at my mother's front door carrying these rocks and starting to throw it at the tankers. And I noticed that the drivers and the tankers, because they went up a little bit, there were little kids, about 16, 17 year old Israelis. And that scene right there just made me realize, oh my goodness, I mean, this is generation after generation of hatred. When is this going to end? And I think this was like the turning point for me. I came home, was so disappointed. Of course, I heard about it. I grew up with it. But when you witness something like this, David, it just shifts inside. It shifts you on the inside. It makes you really wonder, where is this world going to, and how can we change this hatred? And obviously, it has to start in the family, in the house, in the home, where parents, especially moms, they have to really be very mindful the way they communicate with their children, the way they talk to them about, even in the playground, in their school, there's a lot of bias, there's a lot of bullying, there's a lot of hatred out there in different aspects, because we're constantly, we grow up judging each other because we are so different and so unique. So where do I feel like hatred needs to be really, you know, being paying attention is at home, where we grew up. I was so grateful that, yes, I did grow up hating in the beginning, but when we came to the United States, my parents' perspective, because of the diversity that we have here, have shifted. And so it wasn't as bad as I grew up. And right now, that's exactly what I taught my children. My children are half Lebanese, and so they have their issues as well in Lebanon. But I taught them on how to really be accepting of everybody, despite who they are, where they come from, or the way they look. So it does start at home. And it is our conditioning, our upbringing. There's no way we are conditioned to believe that everybody's different. We always judge, regardless. We always judge. So just to be mindful and be more conscious when we're looking at someone and instantly paying attention to our thought of what is it that we're thinking of them and how can we shift that thought?
Yeah. And I think that it's interesting when we talk about a global issue, because a couple of things. I remember when I first started traveling, I was in Tunisia, and I was so ignorant of the conflict between the Arab world and Israel. I walked into a travel agent and attempted to buy a ticket to Israel. And the travel agent's like, there is no such place. And I'm like, of course there's a place. Get me a map. I'll show it to you. And in the end, I had to buy a ticket to Egypt and then go across land into Israel. But I also had one experience, which I think a white person as like myself, doesn't often feel. I think there's levels of hatred we can feel, but absolute prejudice against the color of a skin or a race. And that happened in Johannesburg. When I was in Johannesburg, the fact I was white, and I mean, you know, it was when there was the extreme hatred between the blacks and the whites. But then when I lived there, the extreme hatred between the tribes themselves, between the Zulus and Khoisans or Cape Coloureds, was as intense as the hatred between the blacks and the whites. And it's like you say, as you delve behind that curtain, and Svea, I want you to talk about this in your terms. When you talk about, I asked the same question to Saha, you know, this idea of hatred. And the way that hatred is passed from generation to generation. What has been your understanding and counseling people listening right now? The people who listen to this show are conscious or want to be, or they're looking to change, they're looking to expand into new ways of seeing the world. But what's some of the advice you could give around this, the subtlety of indoctrination of our own children to have limited thinking about people, places, culture? Well, what's your thoughts on that?
So I think for me, the biggest shift happened when my daughter started saying she hates Arabs. And I mean, we didn't, as Sahar said, it's at home. We never spoke about Arabs bad at home. But we went back to Israel for 6 months, 2 years ago. And my daughter picked that up right away at school. And for me, that was a turning point. I mean, there's no way. I grew up in Israel. We grew up, of course, Arabs are bad and we're the best and we're here to stay and we're going to fight them off. And when you live in America for a while and you get that, hey, it doesn't have to be that way, or it doesn't have to be, we don't have to hate everybody. We can actually learn to live with them. I can have a Jordanian friend that I never had in Israel, but I do have in San Francisco. I had a Lebanese friend in San Francisco. I met an Egyptian friend, Muhammad, who would never be my friend, no way, in Israel, but he is one of my good friends here. I mean, for me, that did a huge shift. So I would say, sometimes you have to do huge shifts to kind of make an impact, even on your daughter. So once I heard that at school from her, I said, who exactly do you hate? Like, who do you know that's Arab that you even hate? And so I don't know. So I said, well, you got that statement. You heard it somewhere. Now let's think, who are the Arabs that you know that you hate? And it's just kind of working on the kids at home that they can think differently. I mean, it's a global thing. Oh, I hate black people. Oh, I hate Jews. Oh, I hate Arabs. I mean, who are the Jews exactly that people hate? Is it you, me? No, it's a global thing. And it's mind-boggling because it so doesn't make sense. And it's all over the world. I mean, Middle East now is burning. There's so many people fighting each other. Not only the Lebanese and Israel now, it's between the Shiites. And look what's happening in Syria. I mean, it's another Holocaust going on and nobody's doing anything.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Well, I think it's crazy. And again, I often say this at one of my programs. I often say, you know, if Adolf Hitler had come to, and Sophia, we just found out before the call that you've been to one of my programs. So we didn't know that before we started chatting, but we'll talk about that in a moment. But if Adolf Hitler had come to one of my programs when he was a young man, the chances of him doing what he did would have been very limited, because when you start to sort of to open up and discover self-love, it's very, very hard to hurt or judge or to live in hate. When you start to fall, I always say the hatred we show the world is typically is how we're feeling inside. It's the poison inside that's really manifesting on the outside. So when you look at that Sahar, and we explore these boundaries within people's thinking, because that's really what it's come down to now. Hatred exists in the mind, is what I've heard you both talk about. It's and then passed on to our children, and in complete ignorance, hatred is so easy to use because I hate Palestinians, or I hate Arabs, or I hate blacks, or I hate gays, you know, and the sort of that big brush of hatred is used and then passed on. What are other things that we can become aware of as listeners? What can we be doing on a daily basis? What can we be doing, not just in our own homes with our own children, but how do we resolve the problem of hatred in the small world that we live in? Because I always think if we're going to change the world, we have to change the world that we exist in, where the people we rub shoulders with every day. Is there things that we can be doing every day, ways of thinking?
Yes, absolutely. One of the reasons that obviously Svi and I came together is because we want to make sure we are an example for others. If her and I could come together and give each other the gift of acceptance and be able to honor each other's choices and really be open to understanding where we both came from, you know, as mothers, as workers, as wives, as whatever you want it to be, we're first human. Everybody is able to do the same. So as we got together, we continue to go out and speak, and we've been honored to have been on amazing platforms, the Shift Network Peace Work with, you know, the teleconferences and the multi-platforms we spoke on, Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, and so on and so forth. We've been published in books right now, the 50 Women Project. Each one of us have a chapter and their stories are in there. And we spoke to communities, local communities, libraries, global platforms. And one of the things that we are always asked is, what are the steps that you feel of forgiveness? So we came up with 7 steps of forgiveness, and we'd love to share them. Is that okay, David?
Oh, I can't wait. I got my pen out. My pen's out. Let's go.
And I think I want to start with step number 1 of acceptance is our inner awareness and readiness. We have to be aware internally of, again, what is our, you know, internal, you know, I call it community, our inner community, you know, all the thoughts or the voices or the, again, conditioning. What are they telling us about the other individual that we were told to hate, or the other group, as I said? What is the awareness of it? And then are we ready? Are we really ready to reach out and say, hey, I accept you? It is okay for me to reach out my hand, and it is okay for me to say, I'm willing to sit and have a dialogue. I'm willing to really just be open and listening to what you have to say without me judging, nor do I intervene and talk about me. Let me just listen. And Svi and I have done a lot of that. We just sit and listen to each other's stories and just open our hearts without judgment. So that would be our first step.
And then the second step is forgiveness and letting go. So really forgiving yourself for things that you've done. I mean, I have stuff that I've done in the Army that I'm not proud of, or, and some I am very proud of, but just forgiving stuff that you've done and forgiving people for what they've done and letting go. And moving on. It's not that tomorrow everybody has to love each other and let's huggy-huggy. No, it doesn't have to be that. The willingness has to be there.
Sophia, let me ask you a question on that. Because forgiveness is, I've done a lot of work for myself because I carried a lot of hatred when I was younger. The process of forgiveness, is there any books or any direction or any programs, or do you just say, look, just forgive? How does someone who is riddled with either a hatred or self-hatred, because I think, like you said, I mean, you know, it really starts with that beating ourselves up and then beating the world up, you know, sort of afterwards. But where would you direct someone to go to start working on forgiveness?
You know, I've done a lot of programs from Landmark Education to Hoffman Institute. For me, it was a huge tool, this, to be willing to look for something like that. So I think people have to really, because when I try to tell people about Landmark Education, I don't know if you're aware of it, but when it's about transformation, and people have to be ready to be transformed. And you know that in the millionaire mind, if you're not ready to be transformed, you won't be transformed.
Right.
And that's where the readiness comes in, you know, sure. And also reading a lot of books too, David. You know, there's so many books, Deepak Chopra, you know, there's so many wonderful books out there that people could begin. And that's what I started by reading and recognizing and being aware of that there's ways of us knowing how to forgive and sure. Letting go.
But I think what we want to leave people with is a sense of the responsibility to learn how to forgive is up to us. If it's something we can do immediately, I practice immediate forgiveness, and it's something that I've been able to build that muscle. But for a lot of people, letting go of the story can be challenging. So you'll need to find your own path, your own way, but do the work. And that's really what you're saying, is that people have to do the work, right?
You have Absolutely. To do the work. And if it's a 3-day weekend somewhere, I've seen people transform in a day and stuff that I've done. An hour, I mean, there's so many stuff out there, but you have to be ready to do it. And it's hard work. It's not always easy forgiving your neighbor who murdered you, your cousin, or your mother who did something terrible for you. No, it's not easy. It's not an easy step, but it's if you're willing to do that work, you can do that work and be transformed and live a great life.
Awesome. So number three?
Number three is belonging. Because as humans, it is our right to belong. We all need to know that we are loved and we belong. It's one of the highest attributes on, you know, the pyramid of actualization. And so for me, as a Palestinian, as a Christian Palestinian, as somebody who was born with blonde hair, blue eyes, light complexion, I never felt I belonged anywhere, David. And so everywhere I went, every school I attended, every person I spoke with told me somehow, somewhere I didn't belong. So belonging is one of the highest things. Until I learned to belong to Sahar and knew that I belonged to me, then I knew that I belong here in this universe. And no one dictates whether we belong or not, whether we belong to Palestine or Israel or United States or Ireland or, you know, we all belong here in the universe. I believe that our existence here is proof enough that we belong. And so to have a sense of belonging and knowing that you need to belong to yourself first and know that you do belong and have the right to belong to your family, to your community, to your church, to wherever you want, the country, your culture, you belong. You were birthed for a reason to belong here on this earth. So belonging is a huge, huge piece of for people to know that they belong. One of my talks that I do independently of this is called Love, Belonging, and the Need for Community, Why the Human Heart Longs to Belong. So the belonging and knowing that you do belong just by existing is very, very important.
You know, I suppose for me, as I heard you say that, there's a part of self-love that came up for me. Is that the same? Is it the same to have self-love and belong? Is it just the pathway to self-love?
Well, for people that, you know, lack of self-esteem is lack of belonging. All the books that I've read on the topic of belonging, it directs to one thing. If you don't feel like you belong, you lack self-esteem and self-love for yourself. It is very it's really correlated and directly belonging, knowing that you belong, because remember, as humans, we need to belong to our family. We need to belong to our culture. We need to belong to our society. And if we feel like we don't belong, we feel alone. When we're alone, we don't feel like we're loved, and we're not loved by others, we're not going to be loving ourselves.
And then it's impossible to love. I mean, that's where the hatred can really, we start to see the world through a different lens where everyone, we see the bad things, not the good, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we start seeing that we are independent of, we're alone. You know, we're not accepted. You know, in Family Constellation, it talks about there is, you know, we have the right to belong, and we also have the right to be independent. And people don't know that. It is okay for me to belong to my family. They might not be approving for everything that I'm doing, but I do belong to that family system. But at the same time, I have the right to also be independent and do whatever it is that I want.
Mm, very nice. Okay, number four.
Number four is one people, one tribe, one universe. And I think that one is key for people to relate to. We're here for once. We live in this lifetime once. You, me, everybody. So if I take Egypt as an example today of what's going on, it's like mind-boggling to me that if they would think of it, that this is, they're here for one shot. Let's make the best out of it. Let's try to be a little more compassionate to each other. Wouldn't life be way more amazing for everybody?
It's interesting when you said that, because I don't want you to repeat it as well, but what I found interesting is that most people, when they receive the call, that they only have a few months to live, or that, you know, cancer's in their body and they have a short time left and it's inoperable, how quickly and how easily forgiveness and wanting to cross the bridges of hatred and make it right suddenly comes up. But what in that sentence of number four, what we're saying is we can do that without having that call, right?
Well, I had that call, so I think part of that came out of that, for me, at least, as a cancer survivor. So, you know, I can't say if I didn't have that call, so maybe it's part of that. But why do you have to get to that call to make that a decision for your life?
And say it again.
Unfortunately, for me, it happened, but...
Yeah. Well, we're glad you're here. So say this.
I'm inviting everybody to take that call without having to experience cancer or a terrible disease.
Sure. And say it again. One lifetime, one tribe, one universe.
One people, one tribe, one universe.
Okay, good. Awesome. Number five?
It's universe, God, spirit, Allah, Muhammad, Buddha. Whoever you want to believe in, both C and I believe that there is a higher power. There is a community in which that we need to reach out to and ask to support, for guidance, for inspiration. I do meditate. I believe that we all have wonderful community of, you know, you could call it whatever you want, whether you're Muslim or Christian or Jewish, that there is a higher power out there that we can reach out to guide us. I know that both Svia and I came together not as an accident. It has been guided, and we believe and we're trusting the process of our unity that we're going to be protected as we continue our journey of sharing our voices and our stories with the world.
You know, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I just, it sounded like we lost Sahar, are you there? I thought we lost her. That's fine. I
just want to say something about that, David, because, you know, part of my job to run a Jewish film festival, I don't always hear great, like, I hear a lot what movies I should bring or what kind of, why do I show movies about this topic or that topic? And, you know, I have high donors who say to me, you should bring more movies that show that the Arabs are doing that to us. And you know, I have to kind of always be in that role of, we're not here to show a politics left or right. We're not here to show, we're here to educate and to really try to make a difference for people. But it's interesting that, you know, not everybody wants that. Not everybody has that same agenda. Well, some people want to continue this conflict, and it feels right for them.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And I think, Sahar, did I get you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. I think that, you know, it's such a great point because, I mean, if people are living in a world of hatred and they're not aware that they can forgive or they can start looking with a new lens, then, you know, the very nature of wanting to see the evidence to support the way they feel inside is essential for them. So they need, they're going to request to see only the things that support how they're feeling rather than let me see the other side so I can open my heart up and witness that. And that's what you're asking everyone to do, is to have that level of acceptance and that curiosity of the other side, as opposed to, and listening to the stories. I love how you said that you two have sat down and listened to each other's stories. And I'm sure, are you both there?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. We're having a lot of noise on the line. But I'm sure that the fact of that listening process has allowed you to sort of delve into that. And I love the fact that you talked about, you know, Buddha, Allah, God, and the spirit universe. And I do a lot of work, again, where I'll bring people of mixed faiths to come together and stand in one faith. And it's beautiful to watch when people let go of the description of their faith and just stand in faith together and surrender to the opportunity to be able to express their faith internally, but to be open to embrace the faith that everyone else is expressing. And then you really do see such beauty and such wonder. But, you know, I often see hatred in churches where people have grown with indoctrinated into one belief system. And when they look out from their church, they'll see every other church is wrong, as opposed to every other church is simply an expression of somebody else's thought patterns. Do you feel that? Do you see that same thing where faith can actually become a reason to separate as opposed to a reason to join?
It's brutal. Absolutely. Religion can be so brutal. I mean, as coming from Israel, where religion is so big in the country, it is, there's so, so much against other people. Once it's their way or the highway, that makes controversy. That's what makes the hatred.
Right.
You know, for the past, since 9/11, I started a group called the Castro Valley Citizens for Middle Eastern Awareness, and we brought together Palestinians, Jewish, Islamic women, Christian faith, and we went around and it was an educational for the Castro Valley or the Bay Area community. And one of the things that we've realized that, yes, religion always was brought up, and that's why we formed this community of women to educate people that despite of our religion, we still are united. And for the past, since 9/11, for the past, it's been now, 10 years or 12 years, every single year, the Castro Valley Library, which is a huge library here in the Bay Area, they ask us to go and create what we call the holidays in the Holy Land, where we bring my Islamic friend, my Jewish friend, Sophia is involved as well now, and myself as a Christian. We bring all kind of articles and books and little things to put together in this one beautiful display just to represent our unity. We call it Holidays in the Holy Land. And it's just, again, a representation of how we could all be together and live in peace in this beautiful land that we call, that we're fighting over. And yes, religion plays a huge role. And so we need to be open. And again, I grew up in Saudi Arabia. I had to learn the Quran. I studied Buddhism and as well as Hinduism in college. You know, as a Christian, I don't think I practiced too much my Christianity, but I did hear verses from my mom as Bibles that she shared them with us in Saudi Arabia because we were called infidels. We were not allowed to even say or talk about our religion. And it's unfortunate. Until I came to the United States, I experienced what a Christianity is all about and explore these dynamic, diversity that we have here. So if we don't have to look at somebody else from a religious perspective. Again, it's accepting them for who they are as humans first, and then go deeper and learn and honor who they are and what they do and what they believe.
Awesome. What's number six?
Number six is from victim to creator. So it is so easy, and I'm talking as a woman as well. So many women, so many times, consider themselves a victim. Like, why me? Why do I get paid less? Why do I have to take care of the kids? Why do I? To creating something great for themselves. It could be relationships with other people. It could be creating a business for themselves. But really, in this case, I can just share a personal experience that I have from this. So from a victim to creator for me. So I can say every time I see a woman who has a cover on her head, an Arab, a Muslim, I would usually look for or a bomb on her or just like look at her very like suspiciously. And I learned to work on that. Just accept her as a woman. Just she could just be a mother just like I am. And so what if she has this on her head? And so many times I say to her even, Shalom Aleikum, or this give my five words that I know in Arabic. And right away we can create a new relationship. And she could be from anywhere. She can be from Syria, from here, from wherever she's from. And for me, that made a huge impact, just to be a creator of something and not just a victim or, her family probably bombed, whatever.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things we talk a lot about on the show is to really step out of victimhood and to not blame, justify, or complain about anything. And that's really the essence of true power, is to take 100% responsibility. And it's hard. It's hard if there's an army outside your door, or if there's a wall built around your house. But when we take responsibility and we step out of victimhood, then we taste something which very few people end up getting to taste, which is that true power, which is what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So absolutely. Let's talk about number seven.
Seven is compassion.
So
we really need to have compassion. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yes. And so, yes. So what I want to say is that when I first met Svia, I had to really check in. I had to really see where is it that's inside of me that's going to have to be accepting of Svia and who she is and is Israeli. Now, of course, I've met many Jewish people and I've met Israelis, but I really never had the opportunity, David, to really, really get to know someone from Israel. I also wanted to invite her to be part of my community. Isbia comes to my birthday party every single year when we have celebration. I invite her to events. She invites me to her home. Our children have met. We have, coffee together. As we work together, we continue to go and get to know each other on a deeper level. And what an amazing, beautiful woman she is. But it had to be coming from a place of compassion in order for me to accept for who she is as a woman from Israel, the way I was grown up and I was told, and just also be open to know that she is also a compassionate person. And I think compassion is so important. We need to have compassion for others. Understanding where they come from, too. I had a nice conversation with my father this morning. My father is a wonderful man, but we don't need to always agree. He lives in Jordan, and he's really into the news. Open-minded, but of course he's still, you know, the old-fashioned 75-year-old Palestinian man. But I, as he's speaking and sharing some of the things that's happening in the Middle East, and he's right in it, I had to really be open and being compassionate, listening from a place of his experience and not mine. Mm. I always tell people, detach yourself from the, you know, the good opinion of others. And if you just open your heart and listen with compassion and know that the other person, whatever it is that they're sharing with you, is their experience, then you are open to hearing it with compassion. Am I making sense, David?
I think it makes so much sense. And I think it's one of the hardest things to do. What I love about it is your own father. And yet you have to practice. That's a muscle. I think that everyone, if they took nothing else from the show, but that one ability to sit in front of somebody and hear their perspective without judgment and understand their perspective. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't make it anything. It just is their truth with who they are in that moment, with their history, their experience, their indoctrination. So I think it's a very, very powerful, powerful statement. I do want to say, you know, we're actually at the end of the show.
David?
Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
I can hear you, David.
Okay.
I don't know if we lost the
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're having a little bit
I can hear you.
Okay, great. We're actually at the end of the show, and I'm going to run it a little longer because I think we could talk for another hour very, very easily. But Sahara, before we sort of wrap this up, what would be the message that you would love to impart quite simply on everyone listening today? What's the message? What have you learned from this experience? And what is the one takeaway that everyone can really ruminate on and really think about?
Very good question. Right now, today, I'm asking all of you who are listening to commit to one thing. If today you set an intention to reach out to someone that is different than you, reach out to a neighbor that might have an accent or somebody who has a different belief, somebody who you feel like you may not be comfortable reaching out to, and just be open to accepting who they are, open your heart with compassion, listen to their story, and set an intention. If every single one of you who's on the call can reach out to someone who you were told or conditioned to believe that you may not want to be part of their world, I encourage you to get out of your comfort zone and just go out and do it. And with that, I want to tell you that I'm going to be doing the same, despite of the fact that me and Svi are together, but I'm still human and there's a lot of judgment inside of us. I am committing to that, and I ask each one of you to commit to the same. If we, each one of us who is on the call, could do that once or twice a week, we will have a much better world.
Very nice. And Svia?
I wanna give everybody exercise. Go and do something that you probably don't do every day. Is this talk to somebody who actually seems the worst person or the last person in the room that you would probably say hello to, and say hello to him and just see what that does to your heart. And this, maybe have a small conversation. It will do miracles. Miracles. Mm. to everybody. It's just it's a little exercise that, I mean, it could be to a Jewish person, you know, Muslim, an African American, whatever you don't feel comfortable doing. So I know many people in my society who probably never talk to somebody who has a Muslim cover on their head. Just doing that is an extremely amazing little exercise. It does miracles.
And so simple, so simple.
So simple.
Sahar, as we wrap up the show, I always ask the same question. You know, Kick-Ass Life is the name of the show, The Kick-Ass Life. But what is a kick-ass life to you?
Kick-ass life is to go and just enjoy life and be know that you are loved and you belong here in this universe and you deserve to be here because you know, no one could dictate whether you belong here or not. No one dictates who you are and what you are, what you believe. Just go and have a good time and kick ass.
Lovely. And Svia?
Kick ass is actually getting out of your comfort zone and do something that is out of the box.
Nice. Well, ladies, this won't be the last time. I could carry on. I feel like we've just touched the surface of a beautiful conversation. You really bring a spring of hope. I think that really the world sadly needs, but badly needs. And I just want to send my love to both of you. And I can't wait to meet again in person and see you. Svia, it's been a long time, but we need to say hi again.
and David, is it okay if we just share with everybody that we do have a Facebook group called The Gift of Acceptance? We'd love for people to like our Facebook group and just start dialogue, and we'll be able to reach out to them if they choose to.
Yeah, just say that one more time.
We have a Facebook group called The Gift of Acceptance, and we want to invite everybody to be part of our Facebook group.
Awesome. I'll do that right now. Ladies, thank you so much, and I will definitely see you on the other side.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Sarah.
Now, I want to dedicate the show to my Israeli friends and my Arab friends. And as I sort of sit back now, you know, it's 2013, listen to me. I was there in 1984. That's a long time ago. But this country and this region and both the Palestinian, the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and the State of Israel, sort of etched on my heart many, many things. And I found fascinating, you know, traveling through Jerusalem and the different quarters of Jerusalem, whether you're in the Christian or the Arab quarter or traveling through this, the many facets of humanity. I always say that everyone should spend a year in this region to sort of allow it to sort of talk to you in its own unique way. But I love the idea that there are great people like Sahar and Svia who truly stand up for something, and I can't imagine how challenging it must be when they're standing with their own people who so desperately want to hate because of indoctrination, because of what they've been taught to believe. And yet still they stand up in front of them and urge them to forgive and urge them to understand and urge them to reserve their judgments and just to see the beauty of each person. I can't describe the emotion, especially as I sit here looking out across this landscape, because I remember I worked on a fishing boat in the Sea of Galilee and it was unbelievable. To be able to venture out on this fishing boat, and we used to catch a fish called St. Peter's fish, and this little, well, it wasn't little, I mean, there was about five or six of us working on the boat with these big nets, and you know, we'd have a metal skiff that would pull behind the main boat, and so, you know, we would track the fish, and suddenly the skiff would be let go, and the big net would reel off the back of the fishing boat. We'd pull a big circle, and we'd winch in the bottom. And I remember being so naive, as I would sit there and throw back all the little ones, because it was such a, you know, I mean, I couldn't believe this one leg had so many fish in it. But we would catch these fish, and I remember laying on the nets. We'd always cook some fish on the way back. I was working on a kibbutz called Ginosa, and just laying on the nets in my shorts, and sometimes we'd cook up a fish on the way home and eat it with our fingers. It was just an amazing time. But listening to the stories of these fishermen, many had their fingers missing because, you know, when you're working on these big metal boats that would be brought together in, you know, different weather patterns, and you know, a lot of them would lose their fingers, or, you know, you'd have two fingers on one hand. But they told stories of 1948, when the State of Israel was formed, and you know, them fighting and all the kibbutz would sort of fight independently. And as I'd sit there and listen to these stories and these older, old men with their sort of these sun etched on their face and sort of their lineage and their belief systems. And then in the afternoons, I would go on the same kibbutz. I would go off and I played with a group of Palestinians on a soccer team. And just being able to be an observer in a land where there was so much color, so much history, so many stories. And of course, war being such a relevant part of the story that has run through generations of both Israelis and Palestinians. And again, you know, I think that, you know, the kick-ass life, as I listen to Tzvia and Sahari, I believe that hope is, you know, that there is something about the essence of this show that is about hope, that is about the belief that one day as a people, only independently, we can each do it. It doesn't have to be a whole race of people, but as you begin to let go of your stories of the world and stay open to the possibilities, because I think it is our stories. It's a story we make up about what's real. But there is, I don't believe, you know, there isn't a real, you know. It's like, I'll give you an example. Because I traveled so much, I wasn't robbed ever. I had a gun pulled on me one time in Roatan in Honduras. But I was never robbed or anything like that. But I saw people that were, and I met people that were. And, you know, I think of someone going to Mexico, to Tijuana, and getting robbed, and then coming home and saying, well, you know, Mexico sucks, and it's a bad place full of bad people. Because the only experience they had was at the hands of one hooligan or one thief or one, especially in a bad place, any border towns, anywhere in the world, border towns are the worst place to be. And then painting a whole race of people from one experience. And I always urge people to sort of delve off the trodden path and going down the path less traveled to discover the sort of the heart of a people and sort of delve into the communities with wonder and curiosity of a small child. And as I sit here looking out across our culture here, this Canadian landscape etched by millennials of time and in deep gratitude, I urge you all to just listen to those stories. And if those stories ever come to a place of negativity, then it's time to change the story. So with that, I'll definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.